You love podcasts, the stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.
Hey, I'm Zach, and one day I'm going to make movies, but right now I'm young, dumb, and not nearly as good-looking as my co-hosts. So with the help of...
I'm Matthew.
I'm Rodrigo.
I'm Steven.
I'm going to learn what makes a movie great by watching all the classics I have skipped over. So pop the corn and turn your cell phone to silent, because it's time for a new episode of Zach on Film. We're back, and now we have machine guns, explosions, blood, cool guy talk. It's all happening as we talk Die Hard this week on Zach on Film.
Zach on Film.
Hey, Zach, welcome back.
Yo, Steven.
So why don't you address why we haven't had some Zach on Films for like the last month, maybe?
Yeah, it's been a while since we've had Zach on Film.
Haven't been attending class. That's basically it.
The true story of why there has been no Zach on Film is because I have a job that I work at every day, and sports happens to be a big part of it. And basketball season started about the beginning of December, when Zach on Film kind of stopped there for a little bit. And that is because Tuesday nights also have basketball games. It's not just Fridays. And I had to kickstart kind of a thing we're doing on Tuesdays, so I had to take over that for a while. So I could not record for a while, and hopefully that'll be fixed out and sorted better in the future.
I think we're going to have hits and misses.
It's not going to be consistent.
And
I will tell you that now.
We can't do Zach on Film without Zach.
You could. It would just be...
we'd be like...
It'd be wrong.
So, Zach...
Yeah.
When this is you not here.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, Zach, tell us about this week's film. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Good point, huh?
Yeah.
I just don't think that would be as interesting.
I mean, for an hour, that's worth your time, probably.
So originally, we wanted to do this week's film before Christmas, because some people will say that this is the ultimate Christmas movie.
Yeah.
And I, you know, to a point, I'd say, you know what? It is a pretty damn good Christmas movie. Better than Christmas Story.
No.
Not no. a Christmas movie.
It's not a Christmas movie.
It is a Christmas movie.
It happens
movie.
During Christmas.
It is not a Christmas movie.
Look, what is Christmas about? Christmas is about family getting together.
Yeah.
Overcoming differences. Blowing shit up.
Yeah. I guess that's true.
That's Christmas.
Of course.
What is in Die Hard? Family coming together. Trying to get over their differences. Blow shit up.
Right. That's true.
Never has Alan Rickman come to my family holiday celebration.
Would you want
you
him
never
to
have
go,
him
really?
To, yes, I would, because he'd be sitting there, and Alan Rickman would be like, I'm going to spin the dreidel now.
We haven't even mentioned the title of this week's movie, Die Hard, from 1988, starring Bruce Willis. Now,
yes.
Interestingly, this is the first movie role of Alan Rickman.
Look at that. And he would go on to be Snape, Severus Snape.
Yep,
Snape,
he would be.
He would also go on to be other things.
What, is he in other things? Honestly, I don't think I've actually seen him in anything else. Just 8 Harry Potter movies and Die Hard.
Zach.
What else is he in?
Well, I don't know. Let's look it up.
Okay.
That's why there's a thing called the IMDb. Let's see. He was in... Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince.
Nailed it.
He was in Sweeney Todd, the Demon Barber of Fleet Street.
Okay, I have seen that.
He was in Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. He was in Snowcake.
What?
He was in Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire. He was in...
There's a movie called
Snowcake? He played the voice of Marvin the Paranoid Android in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Never seen it.
He was in Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban.
Right.
He was in Love Actually.
Nope.
He was in Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets.
Yep.
He was in Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone.
Yep.
All right.
No more of those.
And some other movies.
Oh, okay.
Including
Die
Hard.
He was in Dogma.
Yeah.
He was the Metatron.
Oh, he is
the
in voice. Dogma.
He had the best lines in Dogma.
Yep.
But did not tell you she was funny.
Yep.
Yeah. Gotta love him. Yeah, he's the reason to watch this movie.
Oh,
Alan
Rickman?
Absolutely.
Oh,
yeah.
He's better.
Well, that and the fact that you actually have Heinrich, Hans, Klaus, and Carl all just lined up. You know what? We're literally like one Wilhelm away from just like an Oktoberfest breaking out.
What's really mind-blowing, and again, for those of us that are old enough to be alive in 1988, mm-hmm. And I was in high school, and I remember my friends coming back. At that time, my parents still probably are. Really weird about me going to an R-rated movie.
Yeah.
And so I really couldn't go see R-rated movies unless I went by myself and told them I was just going to go see a movie. And then after the fact, told them what movie I went to see. Mm-hmm. But if I had told them, oh, I'm going to go see Die Hard, and they saw that it was R-rated, I would never be allowed to have gone to it.
Yeah.
But my friends, and even my nerdiest friend that I had, he and his brother came to school one day and they just were quoting all of these lines from the movie. I'm like, what movie are you guys talking about? They're like, Die Hard. It's a Christmas movie. You need to go see it.
It's a Christmas
movie. And I'm like, okay. And so it was like a year. I think it was before it came out on VHS or on it. Well, I shouldn't say VHS, on HBO or Showtime, before I got a chance to see it, because my friend would record movies for me and then give them to me.
Right.
The
original Pirate Bay.
Yes. You know what? That's probably right.
We don't talk about it. It was keep circulating the tapes.
Yeah, exactly. But here, for those of us that, again, we're old enough to remember, there was a show on television that at one point was the number one comedy on television called Moonlighting, about these
not
two detectives.
Not Moonlighting.
No, that's what I said.
Steven
Moonlighting.
Steven has a cold.
probably from this big flight that I was on recently. So many sick people doing sick things.
Yeah.
All I heard they threw you off because they didn't like your movie, Red all State.
They said that I was too fat. I was worried about that one on the second plane because it was pretty small. I thought they were going to say, sir, can you sit on the back of the plane or something like that to distribute the weight? but there was a show called Moonlighting about these two detectives, David Addison and Maddie Hayes, mm-hmm. and had a great theme song. It was funny. And it was comedy. And it starred Bruce Willis.
Nice.
When he had hair. Or Whoa. At that time, some hair.
Weird.
Are you sure it didn't star Curtis Armstrong?
That's really who.
Seeing Booger in a suit and tie.
You know, when you talk about moments when shows started to go down, I liked it when he was on occasionally, but when he became the most regular guy on the show back, and that was at when Willis and who played Maddie Hayes? I forgot her name already.
Sybil
Shepherd. When they got too busy and they were doing too much fighting and they could only be on the show certain times of the year, and then it became Curtis Armstrong and the rhyming receptionist show, didn't become as fun. But Moonlighting was still the best episode ever, Zach.
Yes.
If you want to see the best episode of Moonlighting ever,
I do.
You need to see the one where they tell the tale of the Taming of the Shrew. And it's kind of meta because this kid comes in to sit down and watch an episode of Moonlighting on TV, but his mom says, have you read Taming of the Shrew yet for your homework? And he's like, no. And she's like, go read it. And so he goes and reads The Taming of the Shrew with all of the actors in the place of the characters from Taming of the Shrew.
Well, that's interesting.
It is.
And who
visually,
all is in The Taming of the Shrew? There's,
you know,
Heath
that one
Ledger.
Person. Yes. And it's, and, it is funny. It's a great thing. But so here's this comedian who is going to be an action star.
Mm-hmm.
And people are like, how in the heck are you going to get a comedian to be serious as a Rambo or a Lethal Weapon? Both of those movies had come out before Die Hard.
Okay.
And some people will say, well, Rambo is the modern day start of action movies. And I don't think so. I really think that Die Hard is the start of the modern day action film. And some people will say Lethal Weapon with Mel Gibson. And Zach's looking at me as I'm pointing to my head and doing the screwball around the ears.
No, I figured that one.
But no, it's really right here with Die Hard. And when they were doing the promotions for Die Hard, Bruce Willis's face was not front and center on the promotions. It was Alan Rickman on this.
Interesting.
And
because Alan Rickman was he was a thing.
Well, he was certainly the scary bad guy. And there's some
was
people
the it guy of 1987.
some people might argue, and I don't know, let me get your guys' thought on this. I was reading an article the other day where someone was saying that Alan Rickman is really the protagonist of this story. He's the one that's driving the entire story.
Mm-hmm.
He's the one that is creating the issues and trying to get his goal of all the bonds in this safe, that he's the real protagonist, and it's Bruce Willis who's his antagonist, stopping him from doing everything.
Well, I mean, from a storytelling perspective, that's kind of true. The problem that you run into there is most people take protagonist to mean hero.
True.
Right.
And in this case, you have a villain protagonist, and then you have Bruce Willis basically coming in and being kind of that pop-and-go villainous role. I mean, if you look at the structure of the story, that is entirely accurate.
Mm-hmm.
Willis basically, he falls in almost into the Bugs Bunny role, maybe a little bloodier with a few more F-bombs. But, Hans Gruber is trying to Daffy Duck it up the place, and then Bruce Willis keeps popping in and doing his Bugs Bunny thing, and finally he figures it all out and takes Lola Bunny hostage.
I kind of thought about the middle of this when he kicks the chair at the C4 down the
elevator
shaft. I was like,
welcome to the party.
Yeah, this is adult Home Alone almost. That's what I kind of thought. I was like, he just needs to set some more traps and kick someone in the head with a brick, and he's fine.
So
like,
I'm really curious. This is the first time you've ever seen Die Hard.
Oh, absolutely.
Even after I've been begging you for like 6 years.
Yeah, no,
to watch Die Hard.
Yeah, no, not this was not my thing.
Why not? It's not your thing.
Action movies have never done it for me that much. Not a big never seen Rambo. I've watched Rockies out of respect for my dad, but I really don't like the Rocky movies that much.
Okay. Shaking my head in disgust, and I'm just speechless at this point, Zach.
Yeah, I know. Big surprise.
So the first Rocky movie is really a great character piece, right? And it's not about the action. It's not about the boxing.
Yeah.
It's about how this character is evolving and what he is coming to grips with, and we'll do Rocky later down the road.
Oh, yeah.
When what was the other movie you mentioned that I was just...
Rambo.
Rambo. So the first Rambo movie, First Blood, is, again, a good character piece that has some action in it.
Mm.
And really has that underlying theme of, to an extent, I mean, you really kind of have to push it maybe a little bit too far, of what are we doing with our vets coming home from Vietnam? Because this movie came out in, 82, I want to say? 83, Rambo?
Yeah, I'm going to say 82 on Rambo.
First Blood came out in 82, and that's the one that I'm talking about.
Right.
And this is still within that realm of bringing the troops back from Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
But here's a story that's really, in Die Hard, really a sequel to a previous story written by John McTiernan about this character that Bruce Willis plays.
John McClane.
And as this book starts, or as this story starts, he and his wife have gone through irreconcilable differences, essentially, where he wants to be a cop in New York. She wants to grow a career opportunity, again, in the 80s, not something that many women do.
Right.
And he's got to come to L.A. at Christmas time to see if he can patch things up and get the family unit back together. The bad thing is, at the Nakatomi Towers, where Japanese organization... where the holiday party is going on, a bunch of terrorists come in, and everyone thinks that they're there to hold the place hostage until their crazy terrorist cell demands are met.
Mm-hmm.
But in reality, they're there to perform a high-end heist of ripping off these bearer bonds and making themselves millionaires.
Right.
The Alan Rickman character thinks that he has everything taken care of until this rogue element, Bruce Willis, comes in and screws everything up for him. And so this whole process of the whole process of the movie is, how are we going to defeat the rogue element while still keeping on our timetable so that we can get out of here the way that we have things planned?
Right.
And of course, it all ends with the Bruce Willis winning, the bad guys,
everyone dying.
And of course,
right,
since we have the explicit tag, shit blowing up.
Right. Of course.
Right. Yeah. So you don't like the shit blowing up part? Is that what gets to you?
I don't know. It's just like, maybe I should actually watch these old movies of action nature now that I've grown from the movie critics of essentially of a Natty Light to a nice Cabernet wine. That's what I'm gonna say my movie looking has shifted to. It's probably a horrible analogy. Don't worry about it.
Was that an analogy?
I don't know.
I think it was a
I said saying. Sure, I don't know. English is my second language.
So what are the big things? What are the big, if you could pick two or three big things in this movie that are kind of general themes or tropes?
General themes or tropes.
In this movie, what would they be?
Saying a really cool line before something explodes.
Okay, saying a really cool line.
Yeah.
Okay.
A lot of blood.
Okay. Violence. And
outrageous explosions.
And blowing stuff up.
Yeah.
So, look at every quote-unquote action movie since then.
Mm-hmm.
Look at Transformers.
Oh, no. That's why I watched this movie. I was like, oh, Michael Bay totally watched this movie. He was young. Looked it up. He was 20 when this came out. I was like, yeah, he saw this. It's like, I'm going to do this one day. Lens flares, explosions, guys saying cool stuff.
Look at
Michael Bay.
Look at J.J. Abrams.
Oh, yeah.
Look at any action movie today, and it's got somebody saying a quippy line.
Mm-hmm.
It's got lots of fight scenes and violence. And then it's got massive explosions on an epic scale. Things that people wouldn't survive from, right?
Yeah.
And it's you can trace that line back to this point right here at Die Hard as the modern action adventure.
Oh, no. I understood like this is where things started for this genre, but it's still not my cup of tea. It's not my thing I enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I understood why this was important from watching it.
There's a. Another cool thing about Die Hard and the way that it's presented in story structure, I think, is really, really solid as well. You know, the end of the first act, we talk about stories having a beginning, middle, and end.
Mm-hmm.
The end of the first act doesn't come until almost 30 minutes into the movie. So in the beginning, the story, the director and everybody tell a great story of setting up who John McClane is because we see him getting off the plane with a giant teddy bear.
Mm-hmm.
So we know that he's family man. We know that he still may have a wandering eye because he flirts a little bit with people.
Mm-hmm.
He's getting in the limo, and instead of riding in the back, he's more than happy to ride up in the front.
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't want to talk about things that are going on. He gets upset because his wife is not holding his name. And he's a hothead. All of this happens up until the moment where Holly, his wife, has to go down and make a speech to everyone at Nakatomi Tower. And some great parallel storytelling because as he is moving to the building, we are intercutting with Rickman and the, what do they call themselves? First Dawn or whatever they are, the terrorist group. And we're intercutting them going through the building at the same time that Willis is going through the building. And we see them setting up their plot while we're also seeing Willis. There's great parallel storytelling. This is a perfect example of parallel storytelling. Things start, guns going off. Usually when we end a first act is when the character has to decide whether they're going to fight or run or, you know, whatever that they're going to do. And it's at the point Bruce Willis is looking out the window and sees the terrorist coming down the hallway. He knows he can't grab his gun.
Mm-hmm.
He looks, he sees an exit. And the minute that he runs and we see that exit door closing, that's the end of Act One. We get to the end of Act Two really is when everything is just on fire and burning, right? Because that's really where Act Three begins, where we see the resolution and the big fight at the end and then the hanging out the window. Spoiler. And we think that we're at the end of Act Three when Rickman falls to his death. I got an interesting bit on that.
Oh.
And then he and his wife are hugging each other and the Christmas music comes up and all that stuff. You also have something. Matthew, maybe you remember the term for it. It's slipping my mind at the moment where it's a climax after the main climax. And it's really the resolution of the story for the cop.
Yeah. Pal.
Yeah. Right, yeah, Pal. No. The
Pal.
Al.
Yeah.
Al.
The other cop.
Yeah. The guy that went on to be on Family Matters.
Right.
Uncle Phil. No.
No.
Not Uncle
But so we get to this point where the Bruce Willis story is resolved. You know, right. He and his wife are together. They're all happy. But Powell, who has told this story earlier in the film about how he can't be a cop anymore, can only be a desk cop because of this incident that happened, he gets his own resolution in the story, too, because then right. We have Fritz or whatever his name jumping out and getting ready to kill everybody. And then Powell makes his move and mm-hmm. kills the guy.
Totally.
And so we have kind of two little resolutions that go on in this piece. The other thing about storytelling that's really good is this is the perfect case of the rise and fall in your action, where you build up to some action and it gets really intense. Mm. And then you give your audience a moment to pause and breathe. You know, yeah. These parts where Bruce Willis is running around going, come on, come on, come on. Why didn't you do this? Why didn't you do that? Up in the unfinished parts of the building.
Right.
And then somebody comes up and has a fight scene, and then you pause a little bit again. And then another fight scene that's bigger than the last. And it keeps building and giving the audience a chance to breathe. And that's really important in an action film is if you just run it nonstop, your audience is going to be exhausted and won't be able to keep up. But if you give them moments where they can catch their breath before the next rise in action, you're going to hold them on for a long time. And this movie does an excellent job of that. What are some things that you noticed about the film, either from the narrative side, from uh-huh. the storytelling side? Or wherever you want to take this.
Let me look at my notes.
Oh, yeah, you got a bunch of notes here this week.
Let's go to my first one. I realized that, you know, you can use smoke and fog to diffuse light and you get some nice looks. I learned through Die Hard that if you want to get a wide spectrum of lighting situations into your movie, just start blowing up a building. Because you're going to get blinking emergency lights, odd colors of lights, like red lights for all the emergency stuff. There's going to be smoke in the air. You're going to get diffused things. Lights will be out, so it will seem natural when only part of a person's face is lit because all mm-hmm. these light bulbs just got exploded by a machine gun that somehow holds 80 clips or 80 rounds in its clip because they're just blowing stuff up before they ever need to reload.
Yeah.
So if you want to get some interesting lighting situations in your movie, just start blowing up a building. That's what I learned from Die Hard.
You know, the interesting thing about blowing up that building is this is a Fox Tower. And
yes,
they had to get a crap ton of permission to do that helicopter sequence. And blowing out the windows on the lower floor. I think at the time Ronald Reagan was living there. Oh. I don't know for sure. But they got permission to do that helicopter crash scene. And they were told they could only do it for 2 hours. They had a 2-hour window to do it in. Wow. And they ended up having to do it in 3 takes to get it done right. So they had to reset that entire helicopter crashing into the side of the building 3 times and the flyover with the guns and everything.
Yeah.
3 times in those 2 hours. That's really impressive. Oof. To get something like that
done.
Yeah. The other thing that I found very impressive is Alan Rickman does his own falling stunt. He dropped 70. Really? He dropped 70 feet backwards. Wow. On a green screen, so that when he does that first initial slow motion mm-hmm. falling back and you see him falling, that's not a stunt man. 70 feet is how far he fell back.
Was he in a harness?
No, I think he fell into one of those poofy, puffy things.
Yeah.
Holy but the crap, look of though. Terror on his face
that's real.
Is totally real because he'd never done anything like this
before. That's insane. 70 feet's a long way.
Flip that around to the point where we see the body falling.
Yeah.
And you see the actual person waving their arms as they're falling from the wide shot.
Mm-hmm.
And you see Deputy Dwayne saying, oh, I hope that's not one of the hostages.
Yeah.
interesting thing, and I think this is the first time this stunt was done, is they developed a special way that you could drop people hundreds of feet without them hurting themselves or getting killed and use a very thin wire because they developed this system that would be a slow break system.
Mm-hmm.
So you could fall at gravity speed up until like the last 20 feet or something. And then the system kicks in and it slows you to a stop without jerking you and snapping your neck or anything like that.
Oh my. And that I believe a real person.
Yeah. That's a real stuntman doing that.
Oh,
and I believe that this is the first film that this was done on. The only other one that I can remember, what was the name with, what was the movie with Bruce, not Bruce Willis, Burt Reynolds as the,
Sharky's Machine.
Sharky's Machine. That's the other one that this, that,
where
that
they did that
stuff.
Massive fall.
Yes. Was that Sharky's Machine come out before 88? Or,
Sharky's Machine, I want to say it was 83, maybe? I'll check the wiki. Wiki. That actually is a terrible movie, by the way.
No, but it's got that huge falling sequence. Same technology being used there. Did you find it? I can't even find it.
Sharky's Machine. Is the name
81.
It's about a man named Sharky who has a machine. Yes, and that is a massive fall. That one is ridiculous.
So I was watching this one in Die Hard. I thought, oh, they're just throwing a dummy off the roof or something. And it just happened to look kind of convincing.
No, it's,
wow, that's terrifying.
It is, isn't it? Wouldn't you That'd love to? Horrible. I mean, a lot of, and there's a lot of action. I mean, this is.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of action.
If you want to see, I think you should also, if you're ever, and you said you're not interested in action films, so I don't think that this will ever come up for you. But if you ever need to choreograph an action fight sequence, just look at any of the fight sequences that go on here. From the first time that he fights the guy and then writes the ho-ho-ho before he snaps his neck. Fall down the stairwell.
Yeah, it's a good fight scene.
Just look and see. Break it down shot for shot and look and see how it's done. You'll be, I think, pretty amazed at how well choreographed the fight scenes are. And then even later, when at the end, when he's fighting the main, not Rickman, but the other main bad guy. What's his name?
The one in the body bag?
Franz,
yeah, or Hans, or whatever his name is.
Hans and Franz.
What's his name?
Carl?
Oh, Carl. Carl.
Oh, yeah. That guy.
Carl. Yeah, at the very
Carl,
end.
Hello. I am Carl, and I have come from Six Building. That's how he talks.
Watch that fight sequence, and you'll just see a really great breakdown of how to choreograph a fight scene.
Right on.
He was also one of the Amish in Witness. If you've never seen Witness, you should see Witness.
I thought you were going to say
he was also in the Money Pit. No.
Dang it. Good enough. Blonde guy? Oh,
yes, the blonde guy.
Yeah.
The other thing that really blew people's minds in this movie was the use of Beethoven's Ninth, the Ode to Joy, as your
that was awesome.
As your music throughout the whole movie.
The whole movie was Ode to Joy?
Pretty much. There may be some different. There may be some different moments in the movie where they're doing some other music, but that whole beginning part is the opening act of
maybe
and then it culminates to the bum 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 bum.
That's when I noticed it really.
Yeah, and it's so well done. I haven't watched this movie in a while. I have to sit down and watch it again. I didn't have time to sit down and refresh my my memory on everything.
I said that action movies aren't my thing, and they certainly aren't by a long stretch. But I totally did get sucked into this movie, which I did not expect going in. It could have been Bruce Willis's incredible pecs. The dude was ripped, which was a nice way to show it off when they just slowly took off all of what he was wearing on top of his body. I was confused when he didn't have when he went from t-shirt to tank top coming out of the vents.
Yeah.
I was like, where'd your shirt go, Bruce?
It was all dirty.
I go, well, his tank top wasn't very clean.
Yeah, it was all dirty from crawling in those dirty vents. You know, the scene where the guy falls down the shit, where he falls down the shaft and misses and then grabs the other one.
Oh, yeah.
That was actually a mistake. That's a, that was a stunt that went wrong.
Oh,
the
really?
The stuntman missed the vent that he was supposed to be in and caught the second. And then in editing, the editor was like, well, you know, this is actually a better shot than the one where the stunt actually worked.
Interesting.
And so they use that. So here's the thing. And we've talked about this before where Die Hard had such an impression on people that you will see so much of this played again and again and again and again in other movies. The crawling through the ventilation system, the blowing up the building, the jumping off the stuff, just over the top action, even in the old, even in the sequels to Die Hard. But some people even actually recreate the entire plot to Die Hard in 60 minutes. a couple of weeks ago on the Major Spoilers Podcast, one of the other shows that we do in the Major Spoilers Podcast Network, Matthew and I were discussing a TV show called Almost Human. It's a show on
Fox.
There is an episode where they do Die Hard. I'm serious. You laugh. If you watch, if you've seen Die Hard and you watch this episode, you're going to go, they totally ripped off Die Hard. Even the crawling through the elevator scene.
Wow.
Or the, not the elevator, through the ventilation system. Totally ripped it off.
Interesting.
So you're going to see homages it's an to homage. These things. Boy. I mean, it's like lifting heavy plot points, key elements from the film.
Did they really heavily lampshade it and go, hey, guys who are watching who know the Die Hard?
No, not at all. Not at all. That's why I was at the point where I realized that this was a heist, and then they hit the, you know, the lockdown, the crawling through the ventilation shaft, the point where these terrorists are not really terrorists, they're just thieves. It was like, this is Die Hard. And I was really disappointed in that show from there.
So. Just going back, hitting on the seeing this influence stuff, hitting back on Michael Bay, Transformers movies, they take one Linkin Park song and that's their entire score. I'm not kidding. They do the orchestra.
Linkin Park
renditions.
And Ode to Joy are very similar.
Well, I'm just saying they take a music piece and create their score. Just throwing that out there. Let's thank some people.
Okay.
Because
they're
do
cool.
That.
I spoke prematurely.
Where that's okay, it happens.
Yeah, I know.
It's okay. Who are our executive producers?
No, not executive producers. Let's make that clear.
I'm sorry, you're the executive.
They're the associate producers.
Hold on, I have
the
script.
I'm the key grip.
I'm the best boy. Let's keep naming things, because apparently it's
what's
close.
A producer do? I don't know.
Then you're a producer.
Stop asking
me questions. Shows tomorrow. There's my thing. It's opening. Hey.
Bam, 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 bam,
bam, bam, bam, bam. Associate producers here. Nope, I'm good now. Shout out to our associate producers: Peter Walker, Kevin Hope, Colin McCauley, Brian Riley, Paul Wade, Sean Brown, Olin Luttrell, Richard Kubrick, Ryan King, and Stephen Bauer. Thank you for your donation to Major Spoilers.
Stephen King and Ryan Bauer.
Yep, for sure. Thank you for donating to Major Spoilers and keeping all these shows going week in and week out.
Yep.
We love you all.
If it wasn't for you guys, we would not be able to do what we're doing.
And not even close.
Most certainly would not have gotten really close to winning a podcast award this year. So thank you for that.
Careful.
What else you got there, Zach?
What else do I got here?
Anything else?
Let me find
Final thoughts?
Final thoughts. The fiance watched this movie with me.
Oh, yeah. We forgot about her.
And by watched it with me, I mean, I started it last night, and I was super tired from working all day and on the site network, and then I was like, I fell asleep. I was like, if I fall asleep, Steven's going to be mad at me, so I just got to turn it off. But she actually enjoyed it, and she was kind of happy Snape was in there. That made her more interested in this movie.
You know what I do love about this? Speaking of Snape, this movie is fascinating for me to watch as a lifelong player of a game called Hey, It's That Guy. This movie has Principal Dick Vernon and Walter Peck of the EPA, and they're not villains, but they're still douchey, and they're still Principal Dick Vernon and Walter Peck-esque terrible people in this film, and I'm like, I want to hate you both because of the other things I know you from.
Well,
Zach is like, are these references to movies from the
80s? Well, he saw 16 Candles. We talked about 16 Candles on the show. Right? I mean, not 16 Candles.
The Breakfast Club.
Yeah. So yeah. Vernon is in there.
Yeah.
You recognized him.
You've
right?
seen Ghostbusters, right?
And have you seen Family Matters?
No.
With Urkel?
No.
Okay, so he doesn't know who Al Powell is.
No, that guy looked familiar.
Have you seen the Harry Potter?
No, what is this you speak of?
Oh, it's a great movie, Zach. You should really go check it out. There's eight of them.
It's really a movie. Wow. It's the one where Patrick Swayze and Demi Moore are making clay pots, but they're really hairy.
It sounds like Ghost.
Shh.
Oh. Oh. saw through your ruse.
So we had a discussion. Yeah. A short discussion.
Yeah.
Zach didn't like the film. That's okay.
Well,
that's okay, Zach.
Zach,
yeah, I guess we could say I didn't love the film. I appreciate the film. I liked
F-.
Yeah. I understand why people like it. I think a little bit comes up from the Bruce Willis, John McClane character of being such an underdog, going against the terrorist, but also sticking it to the man of the stupid cop people. I think he's a likable character who says cool stuff.
And he's not
stuff up.
He's not like Nicolas Cage in Con Air, where he's suddenly superhuman.
Right.
He bleeds and he you know misses his vent and yeah.
Well, I mean,
he's a character.
Yeah, he's not the perfect
superhero.
Yeah, he's not James Bond who can shoot anyone a mile away with one shot.
It's also an interesting buddy movie.
Yeah.
In the relationship between Bruce Willis and Al Powell,
mm-hmm.
I should say John McClane and Al Powell, because there's a moment where Bruce Willis is at the lowest point of the whole movie.
Mm-hmm.
He's walked through glass, his feet are all cut up and bleeding. He thinks he's going to die, or he knows he's going to die. And he is talking to Powell and having a very personal moment that somebody he's never seen face to face with, and is opening himself up to the audience and to Powell and to his wife, saying, you know, please tell my wife that I love her and I'm sorry. And he's, you know, making his confession. And it's a real change in the character, because he just is at his lowest moment, mm-hmm. and Powell is like, hey, man, you can do this and you can do it. Even though everyone else is telling you to stop it and stand down, go finish what you started.
Yeah.
And, and he does. So it's a weird buddy movie in that
sense. Yeah, I never thought about that, but it totally makes sense.
Yeah. And it's a very subtle buddy movie. It's another thing where, kind of like the reverse of who's the real protagonist, it kind of inverts the standard structure of that buddy movie.
Yeah.
Which I think is really fascinating.
And of course, anytime you can bag on Twinkies, that has to be a good movie. And anytime you can utter the phrase "Yippee-ki-yay,"
yeah,
and then blow people up from the table, that is that's awesome.
It's actually, that line is referring to a person who stirs concrete with a pitchfork.
Yes, that's exactly what it's talking about.
A mortar forker, if you will.
anything else, Zach? Are you going to wrap us up?
No, we can wrap us up.
Okay.
Make sure to head over to MajorSpoilers.com, where you can find this on the cool new redesigned Major Spoilers website. Podcast. Go to the Major Spoilers podcast mini site, where you can find all sorts of podcasts, including this one, where you can give your thoughts on Die Hard. Make sure to, while you're on MajorSpoilers.com, click on that Amazon.com link and do all of your great post-Christmas shopping. So many stuff to buy and make up for all the people you made mad for not buying Christmas gifts. None of it will cost you any extra, but a little bit will come back to Major Spoilers. That's it. I do believe next time we will be watching a movie, and we will promise that we will get that to you as soon as possible. So next time, that'll be next time.
Sunset Boulevard.
Closing. Yeah, oh, Sunset Boulevard.
Sunset
there we go.
Boulevard.
We'll watch Sunset Boulevard for next Zach on film.
It's right there on the list, Zach.
Oh, my
right
screen was blank. Well, I didn't know if you were supposed to say it, because, you know, we don't know when we're going to come back.
Well, I don't know when we come back, but we do know what the next movie is.
Okay, there you go. So, plan ahead. Sunset Boulevard for the next second film.
Grand Canyon University's RN to BSN online degree program makes earning your bachelor's in nursing possible. Balance online coursework with local in-person clinicals to position yourself for potential leadership opportunities in the time you have from wherever you are, leaving room for what matters. Achieve your goals with your personalized plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.
And now another no-brainer money-saving tip from Progressive.
Marcus, what happened?
I was changing my oil and I spilled some on the floor.
Oh, well, use these $50 bills to wipe it up.
Perfect. Got any more?
Yeah, take a couple hundred.
Stop. Instead of using money, use an old rag. And here's a better tip from Progressive on how not to waste money. Don't pay too much for car insurance. Drivers who switch and save could save hundreds. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary.